The space shuttle Atlantis was launched on a mission to the International Space Station on Saturday morning, and we will have a report on that later in the show, including a hopefully a talk with Peter Aylward, who is a Space Association member, who's went to that launch and saw it from the top of the vehicle assembly building. Lucky dog. But before we do that link up with Peter in America, we're going to look back at the mission that I went to last month, and that was the mission of Space Shuttle Discovery, which was a flight to supply the International Space Station. And it had a crew of seven aboard, including one Japanese astronaut and a former teacher as part of the Teacher in Space program. And we're just trying to make contact at the moment with Peter Aylward, and hopefully we might have Peter Aylward online. Peter, are you there?
Yes, I am, Andrew.
Oh, excellent. Now, the item we were just listening to there was a guy called Tom, and he drives a bus there. Now, you must have been fascinated by the actually absolutely incredibly old buses they have there.
Yes, the government-issued buses are fairly old, aren't they?
Yes, well, the chap I just cut off then, and we will have on a future space show, was one of those drivers, and he's been there ever since the very first rocket launches, would you believe? A guy called Tom.
There's a wealth of characters down there.
Yeah. A wealth of characters, yes. Now, Peter, where are you right now?
Actually, Andrew, I'm in Huntsville, Alabama.
What on earth are you doing there? You should be in Florida, mate.
Well, I'm going to be back in Florida for the landing, but there's not a lot happening at the moment in Florida, so I decided to drive up to Huntsville, where was one of the NASA centres there. They were key to the development of the Saturn V boosters, etc., and they've done a lot of work in relation to development of the shuttle and other vehicles, so I decided to come up here, and then I'm going to head down to Houston today. For a few days to cover the mission as it's ongoing. They're doing some spacewalk now. And then I'll be heading back to Florida, hopefully to catch the landing, which happens on the 26th.
Okay, now, could you tell us what you saw when you were at the Kennedy Space Center?
Well, I arrived the day before the launch, and we got a bit of an overview of the Space Center and the various operations and buildings there. The day of the launch was a beautiful, beautiful day. The actual launch was scheduled for 2:20 in the afternoon, and early that morning, the astronauts had their traditional walkout from the operations and checkout building. So I went over there, and I was one of the few people standing near that building as they walked out and did their famous wave to the crowd and got on their silver bus out to the launch pad.
I saw them do the practice of that one.
Oh, did you? Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Your friends, yeah.
Yep, so I saw those guys, and yes, they gave the royal wave and then got on their van and drove off to the pad.
Right, yeah. So then they hightailed off to the launch pad with a security helicopter flying above them just to make sure nothing happened to them on the way. So we got into our ancient bus and drove back to the press site and watched them as they went through the process of getting up the launch tower and then climbing into the shuttle one by one as they got strapped in, and their helmets and gloves and all the equipment that they needed were connected in and put together, and the communications checked, etc. And the weather was quite nice. It was a little bit patchy cloud, but it was quite okay, and the wind wasn't too bad. Florida weather, as probably people maybe quite aware, can be very volatile, and particularly in summer when they have a lot of storms and hurricanes sometimes, it can be very, very dynamic. But the launch day was nice and calm, and we had a great day for that.
Wonderful. Now, where did you see the launch from?
Well, I was fortunate enough to be one of the 11 people selected to actually go up into the vehicle assembly building and see it from the roof of the vehicle assembly building. Very, very privileged to be able to have done that. As I say, it's not it's not designed really for having large numbers of people up there, and so they limit it to 11 because really there's if something disastrous were to happen, you would not be able to really have a large number of people evacuate that area quickly. The building itself, once you're inside the building, is really very safe, but what you have to do is to run from one side of the building to the other to get into these stairwells to get down inside the building. And so if there's more than, say, 11 people plus your escorts, another 3 or 4 people, there would be just not enough time. So that's how they do it. So it was an incredible, well, it was incredible just to be inside the vehicle assembly building, let alone to see the launch, but to actually have a on-time successful liftoff from that vantage point was quite incredible.
Well, what are the advantages of being up there as against being on the ground at the press site, and again as against being at where the public can observe it from?
Well, the press site is a very, very good location. It's as close as most people could get. It's certainly closer than the general public can get. It's closer than, it's as close as the people that aren't actually involved in search and rescue of the astronauts would be. They do have a very, very small team of people in silver heat-proof suits that are parked much closer in armoured thick tanks. And the idea there is if something were to happen on the pad, that they would drive that tank through the flames and hopefully rescue the astronauts. They're all volunteers. It's debatable about how well they would survive an explosion, but they volunteer to do that. So beyond that, the press site is really the closest people can get. And as I say, the public are kept another 3 miles further back. The advantage of being the VAB, well, number one, it's an incredibly historic building, and just to go inside it is a big privilege. It is, I just don't remember the number here, it's about 450 feet high. But I can't do the conversion in my head at the moment.
Peter, the Apollo Saturn V vehicle was 111 metres tall, and it was standing on a mobile transporter, which is about, 20 metres high or so. So the whole thing must be at least 150 metres high, you're right. Pretty good.
I'd say so, yeah.
Yeah.
So from that vantage point, you've got a really great view looking slightly down on the launch pad. You see the entire launch pad, the mount platform, the ocean, etc. You're able to see the vehicle rising up very, very clearly. What I also did, and listeners will be able to hear this in a couple of weeks, I did a digital recording from that vantage point, and I'm hoping that it'll be just that slightly clearer and crisp sound of an actual space shuttle launch. So that should make some good listening. As I say, I haven't had a chance to listen back to that at this point yet, but it should be good, I think.
Okay, yes, because if you do the same from the ground, then the sound has to sort of come across the tops of trees and things before you can actually, before it reaches your recorder, unless you've got a remote recorder placed up close.
That's correct, yeah. So on the roof, it's quite incredible because you obviously see the lift off before you feel it or hear it. You see it, and then you start to hear the rumble, and then a few seconds later you actually feel it. You feel it in your chest and your pants and your hair. You feel the whole thing. On the roof, you get that as well, but then the roof starts to shake. So you actually get a slight earthquake on the roof of the building, so it's quite an incredible experience. So you'll see I did a video of that on a tripod, and you actually see the tripod shaking slightly. Although in this launch, every launch is different, and the wind and the atmospheric conditions do vary. Many of the experienced watchers said that this wasn't as loud as some of the launches. In fact, 131, the launch that you saw was considerably louder by all reports. So
Yeah, and yet I didn't find it so terribly loud when I was watching it. Maybe because I was so hyped up being my first space shuttle launch. What caught me by surprise, you know, I mean, I was watching the count. I'd only got out there about a minute before because I'd been interviewing an astronaut before that, and I sort of raced down and went onto the lawn by the countdown clock there, and I was trying desperately to get on air until about 20 seconds before the launch, and I saw the countdown clock was, you know, going under a minute. I thought, okay, that's it, I'm not going to get on air. So I sort of put the phone away and picked up the camera, and I got almost caught by surprise because suddenly the whole thing lit up. Oh God, it's going already, I thought. And it was only when the sound hit, you know, some seconds later, it's 5 kilometres away at 3 seconds, about 15 seconds after the actual engine started, you started hearing the sound, that I realised, hey, by God, this thing's really going. So I suppose did that catch you by surprise?
A little bit. It was actually a little bit unusual up there as well, because most places where you can watch the launch, you have the launch audio. So you're able to follow the various markers in the countdown. Up the roof, we didn't have that. So all we had was one of our escorts with us with a radio yelling out, 30 seconds to go, 10 seconds, ignition. So we sort of had our own personal countdown person, so it was just a little bit different as well.
Very good.
Exciting, though. So it was a beautiful launch. The shuttle, that for people that have seen it will probably recall that it comes off the launch pad, and about the first 20 seconds it does a roll onto its back, and the shuttle rolls onto its back, and then as it climbs up it sort of goes more horizontal and sort of climbs out towards its orbital path, and you can watch it go all the way up, and in about two and a half minutes the solid rocket boosters separate, and then it becomes basically a dot, and you can follow that dot for quite a while, although in daylight you lose it. I think in the night launches, the twilight launches, you're able to follow that dot quite a considerable time longer.
Yes, the one that I saw was a dawn launch, and it was dark where we were, but at altitude it was light, and we could follow it for quite a long time. I could tell you how long it was when I look at my digital photos and get the exact time off those, but it was and it was heading way, way downrange before we lost sight of it, and right. It just sort of disappeared behind its own smoke for a while, and then headed downrange, and my photos do show this flaring thing. But the thing, did you see the solid rocket booster separation?
I did, yes.
Because that's one thing I've absolutely no recollection of seeing, and I've looked through it in my photographs that I took, and I think it's what it looks like, a double plume, is in fact because it's blurred, because it was basically the exposure was about 5 or 6 seconds, and I think during that time I shook the camera. So I've got this double image of two things that look like solid rocket boosters, but I think it's just because the camera shook. But I have no recollection of seeing the solid rocket booster separation.
Well, it may once again be the angle. I mean, from the roof of the building, you're slightly further around, so I'm able to see a little bit more from the side. It may have been from your angle that it was climbing away from you, so
it was going almost exactly straight away from me.
It may have been skewed by the smoke trail.
Yes.
So just to round off the liftoff, I went out yesterday morning very early and saw the solid rocket boosters that are recovered and reused. I saw them being towed by a ship back through the dock, back to Cape Canaveral, the Cape Canaveral Air Station, where they do some initial cleaning and separating before they get shipped back to Utah, which is where the casings are processed and modified. However, I suspect that these casings will not be used now because essentially the shuttle missions are coming to a close, and all the boosters would now be manufactured. But quite amazing to see the booster come back through after that powerful dynamic liftoff. The booster just being strapped to the side of the ship and quite passive, but you can definitely see the power, the heat markings on the boosters and the amount of insulation that is used and the amount of damage to that insulation is quite amazing.
Any sign of the other vehicles being prepared for their final missions? After all that?
No, we didn't see... because of the time that I got to the Kennedy Space Center, I wasn't able to go into the vehicle, into the orbiter processing facilities, but Endeavour and Discovery were in their hangars there at the Space Center, and Discovery, of course, having just gotten back from 131, Endeavour is in the final stage of its preparation, and in fact, if there was some issue or some problem with Atlantis, which is up on orbit right now, Endeavour would be rolled out, stacked, and prepared for liftoff to go and rescue the crew. So that's the what they call a launch on need mission. So, at the moment, she's just going in the final stages of her preparation for a mission, which, in fact, was going to be in June, but has now been pushed back to, I believe, September.
Mm-hmm. Were you able to attend any of the press conferences either before the launch or afterwards?
I saw the what they call the L-1 press conference, which is the day before the launch, and then I was able to attend the post-launch press conference. So a couple of questions in each of those. Post-launch press conference is always, well, is a jovial affair. Everyone's quite happy and excited, and the people at the press conference, the people being interviewed are very, very talkative and pumped up. You can imagine that any launch that people successfully insert into orbit is a good launch. And of course, initial reports, which has been confirmed by the following inspections on orbit, indicated that the vehicle is extremely clean and that there doesn't appear to be any damage or any substantial damage that would prove any danger to the crew on entry. So that's post Columbia, of course, we're very, very conscious of that. But as I say, it does appear that the mission's going very, very well at the moment. They completed their second spacewalk and attached the Russian module. Had a few little hiccups, but nothing dramatic.
Well, thank you, Peter. And what are you doing in Huntsville? Let's tell us again.
Well, in Huntsville, there is... I'm actually calling this my Saturn V tour. In Kennedy Space Center, there's an unflown Saturn V rocket, which has been laid out on its side and a building put around it. In Huntsville, there's another one, and that's also in a building now, which is great, and there's an interesting museum here. Excuse me, this is where Dr. Wernher von Braun and his team from Germany were located in the 50s, and they were key to development of the early US suite of rockets, the Saturn boosters that were used for the moon landing. So I've come here to take a look at the museum and to take a look at the facilities up here just get a sense of the history up here, and then I'll be heading down to Houston, I think this afternoon. I'll take it 2 days to get there, to go and cover the ongoing mission from the Mission Control Center in Houston. That's also where the astronauts' home base is, and where they do their EVA training, the giant pool, and preparation for all their equipment and procedures. And it's also where Mission Control Center is, actually are responsible for managing and communicating with the astronauts while they're on orbit. And following that, I will then drive back to Florida and hopefully catch the landing.
Yes, always a problematic thing, the landing. We were describing it before we came on air with you, Peter, the landing of STS-131, the shuttle I saw, and how it got postponed by a whole day, two attempts waved off, and then on the first attempt, on the second day, they waved it off, but on the third attempt, they they managed to land it. So I hope you have good luck in seeing it land there, because the weather there does change so quickly, doesn't it?
Yes, thank you. It's famous for that, Florida. It's famous for that dynamic weather situation. So, yes, it's a toss of the coin. We'll see how we go.
What are the alternatives if they can't land in Florida?
Well, if they can't land on the particular day, they can, as they did with your landing, they could wave off for the next day. They usually have two or three attempts on each day. If it gets to a point where the weather pattern just not going to look... going to cooperate, they can land in on the other side of the country in California at the Edwards Air Force Base. There is also another landing place in New Mexico that I think has only ever been used once or twice. In fact, I spoke to one of the orbiter processing people a while ago, and he said that New Mexico is to be avoided if possible, because when they landed a shuttle there one time, they had so much dirt and debris throughout the vehicle that it took an extremely large amount of time to go through and clean the landing gear. The tiles and the whole body of the craft was really, really, really dirty, so they certainly have tried to avoid that one.
Well, thank you for joining us on the Space Show, Peter.
Thank you, Andrew. This is Atlantis's last mission, so... everyone's a little bit melancholy here. They're very excited that it's been gone off well, but of course, the fact that it'll be the last time it will be launched is very sad. There is a possibility of an extra launch being added. Whether it's Atlantis or not is a debate. So there's a lot of water under the bridge. But this is officially at this point its last flight.
Okay, Peter, and we're going to go now into how NASA called that launch that Peter has just seen.
Sound suppression. Water system activated. T-minus 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8. Go for main engine start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and 0 at liftoff of Space Shuttle Atlantis, reaching the crest of its historic achievements in space.
And Houston Atlantis is in a row.
Roger, roll.
Houston is now controlling. The roll maneuver is complete. Atlantis is in a heads-down position on course for a 51.6 degree, 136 by 36 statute mile orbit. And the three main engines on Atlantis have now been throttled down to 72% of rated thrust. As the orbiter prepares to pass through the area of maximum dynamic pressure on the vehicle in the lower atmosphere. The engine's now beginning to throttle back up.
Atlantis, you are go at throttle up.
Copy, go at throttle up.